I would like to welcome our guests and call to order the Everett City Council meeting of Wednesday, March 11th, 2020. Clerk, will you please take the roll?
Mayor Franklin.
Here.
Councilmember Moore.
Here.
Councilmember Roberts.
And so we have been very busy dealing with the COVID-19 crisis here in our community and across our world.
My name is Cassie Franklin. I'm a 48-year-old mayor in Everett, Washington. This is my diary. This is my story. Before becoming an elected leader, I ran a nonprofit organization helping runaway and homeless young people and their families. I joined a city council, and then I served as mayor starting in January 2018. I was the first woman ever elected mayor in our city.
We move on now to the other breaking headline tonight, that deadly virus spreading from China around the globe. And tonight, it is now here in the U.S. The CDC reporting one man is now hospitalized in Everett, Washington, near Seattle. And now two more major U.S. airports.
When the pandemic started, you know, we had the first known case at the time in the country. And then it quickly picked up in March.
It is March 24th. I don't even know how many weeks we are into this. We have 172 cases in the city, 645 in our county, and 16 people have died. So it's definitely, in just a week's time, it's more than doubled. So these are certainly not things that I expected I'd be thinking about as mayor of a city of 112,000 people. We made the decision to do a mayoral directive to a stay-home directive for our residents to stay home and stay healthy and to only leave if they had essential business to do. We were the first in the state to issue this order, and I issued the order after a hellishly long day where I got home from a city council meeting and found my daughter with a fever, and my husband as well. I saw the activity in my neighborhood, people playing in parks and kids, you know, congregating in groups and cars leaving for work as if everything was still normal. And I began to work with the team very quickly to issue an order, and we issued that on Friday.
More local governments are taking drastic new action to keep people off the streets. 7 million people in the San Francisco Bay Area are being told to shelter in place.
The shelter in place, broadly defined with all kinds of exemptions in the six Bay Area counties in Northern California, that will be extended to other counties and already has been.
It's March 25th. Our numbers didn't change that much today, but then we have this constant pull of small businesses and people crying out for help because the economy has already been so negatively impacted.
We start with a devastating jobs report, the highest unemployment rate since the Great Depression, hitting 14.7% in April, with more than 20 million jobs lost in the coronavirus lockdowns.
I was on multiple conference calls today, talking about layoffs that are happening across the city, across every size business, whether it's Boeing and aerospace to a mom and pop shop that is closing. And our residents are angry and our businesses are angry and they want help. And governments are actually in a position of having to lay people off too. So my first meeting today was to talk about the number of positions that we're going to have to lay off here at the city. So we've got the public safety crisis, and then you've got this financial crisis layered on top of it. It's March 27th. I woke up just terribly sad today and started crying as soon as I woke up, and just been heavy all day. We have a retirement community elder care facility that has about 100 residents. 25 of them are sick. Only one has died thus far, but pretty sure that we're going to see a large number of people succumb to this virus from that community.
It's a lot quieter around Seattle since the state of Washington has become the front line of the coronavirus.
Washington State.
Washington State.
Kirkland, Washington.
And the epicenter in the U.S., Life Care Center, a nursing home in the Seattle suburbs. The majority of the deaths in the U.S. are here. As the death toll climbed, the facility went into
isolation. It's just sad. They're alone and they're not getting any visitors. And they've run out of PPE for the staff, and the staff are working around the clock because half the staff have left. Our whole world is feeling the grief of this, and it reminds me of when my mom died, and I woke up every day kind of with that fresh wave of grief. And so that's kind of how I woke up today, is just realizing that this is the world we're living in right now, and it's just that heavy layer of grief.
Okay, it's Cassie Franklin and my daughter, Panda Franklin, and it is March 28th. So Panda, what's it?
I think about my daughter who's 11, and she's an only child.
It's really boring sometimes because I still, like, my parents found someone to, like, almost, like, tutor me, but it's not the same as having kids at kids my age.
She's been alone, you know? She hasn't had anyone to play with. She's stuck with mom, who works all the time, and dad, who's, you know, trying to work from home and help her with school and do all the things.
What would happen if, like, one of my parents got sick or if I got sick?
Yeah. Who do you worry about the most? Do you think about mom, dad, grandpa, Mimi, grandma, Laura? What's on your mind most of the time? Or do you just kind of think about playing video games? And
I mostly think about how I'm scared for my grandparents and my other grandma and my aunt.
Yeah.
One of the things my daughter and I love to do is go to the movies. And so we, you know, on the weekends, almost always go to whatever the newest movies that were being released. And that's something that we really enjoy as a family. So the theater that we always go to is one of those theaters that you have your, you know, the recliner with your feet up. And we always get Cheeto popcorn and a big water because it's so salty. But yeah, so that's like it's our little home away from home, you know, luxury that we love to do every Saturday. It's been so long, I can't remember the last movie that we saw in the theater. The last photo I have before the world changed and everything really shifted was in February. And it was my my best friend from high school's wedding. And my family, my husband and daughter and I, flew to Bend, Oregon. We're just happy and joyful and hanging out and had no idea that just a week later that I started to have to make these really difficult decisions about advocating to close the schools, closing the city, really just changing everything in the way we live right now here locally.
The New York Times reporting the medical director of the emergency department at New York Presbyterian Allen Hospital, Dr. Lorna Breen, died by suicide. She'd contracted the virus herself, recovered, and gone back to work. Her father telling
somehow I'm supposed to go home and be a mom and normal, and I can't imagine the stress that our doctors and nurses and our first responders are on under every day. So I'd say the community stress in dealing with this remains high, even though we've seen some hopeful movement in our local state and how we're addressing this crisis.
Supplies, PPE, are in short supply, as they are across the country. We need companies to make the materials. It is unbelievable to me that in New York State, in the United States of America, we can't make these materials, and that we are all...
It's April 1st, 2020, and today I am overwhelmed, frustrated, angry, depressed, and I think I rotate between those emotions throughout the day. It is hard not to be defeated and depressed and frustrated when you're trying to fight something that we can't fight. We don't have enough PPE. We don't have enough tests. And we're doing everything we can to contain the spread of an invisible illness that doesn't always show symptoms.
Among the closures, the largest school system in the country.
And it's very painful. It's going to be very difficult for a lot of families.
New York City's mayor closing public schools through April 20th, but he says he doesn't know when it will be safe to resume classes.
It's April 6th, kind of in the thick of it. We just had the governor's press conference, and he announced that school would be closed through the end of the year and that only online schooling is available. So I'll be adjusting to that like all the other parents across my city and how to ensure that my daughter has some learning going on during this time. I've been a little worried today about equity and the lack of equity and how this virus is attacking our city, our country, and our world. You know, our working class, our minimum wage team members are the ones that still have to work across our city. They are grocery store employees and our bus drivers and they are getting sick.
As the numbers of infected expose the unequal toll that coronavirus has had on communities of color, another disparity has emerged.
I'm a caregiver. I work for a home care agency.
Nationwide, Black and Hispanic Americans are more likely to work jobs deemed essential. African Americans.
I've been working with our team, and how do you tackle something as big as equity in general, let alone when you're facing a pandemic, but when you're facing the pandemic, it's more urgent than ever. It's April 23rd, 2020. And, you know, I just had a great meeting with the Youth Advisory Board. I haven't seen them, obviously, in weeks, so this was a virtual meeting. But it was so awesome to see our young people and hear directly from them. It was kind of sad, too. A lot of them shared what they've been going through.
The Youth Advisory Board is got a couple kids in college and a few in high school, and most of those are seniors. And they have continued to lead, even though they're missing out on everything that seniors get to do. They're missing out on hanging out with their friends and skipping class their last year in school. They're missing out on prom. And of course they're missing out on walking across the stage and really getting that public recognition of years of work. And they're doing all this while our world is dying because of climate change. And they have been continuing to be that voice. They're doing that while they continue to advocate for gun reform, and they're doing it while they're standing up against racism.
April 27th, 2020. On Friday, the majority of the local mayors here in the county, about 16 of us, sent a letter to Governor Inslee and really thanking him for his leadership, but also sharing the challenges that our families are facing as they are unable to pay their mortgage, the challenges that businesses are having that are shuttering their doors, and the questions that they're posing to us as their local leaders as to what is going to open, when are we going to be ready to see the new normal, whatever the new normal is. And so we sent this letter just, you know, saying we need some more information. We need to, so hard to be leading right now and knowing we're making the right decision and try to communicate with our public why we're doing what we're doing. And I feel for all my local leaders, from the governor to my fellow mayors and council members, the difficult place we're in.
We are still, because we haven't even entered phase two, in Washington state, the government isn't allowed to be fully functional until phase three.
The numbers are good enough, and the governor and health secretary are allowing King, Pierce, and Snohomish and several other counties to move to the next phase. Como's Keith Eldridge is live to tell us what that means for everybody. Keith?
It means you can go out to dinner. You can make a reservation right now in Tacoma, in Seattle, in Everett, and all the surrounding areas, because now they're allowed indoor dining.
We had only 1,000 cases in the city during these last months, and just under 60 deaths. Now, any death is too many, but that is way better than it was on track to be.
Big crowds pushing for change and a stop to excessive police force. For some, like Tirhas Haley, a medical assistant at Harborview Medical Center, it's personal.
I got 2 sons, and I worry about my kids.
From Harborview Medical Center to City Hall, thousands of nurses, doctors, and people in the healthcare community marched to demand justice.
We need to be standing up for the injustices that have been occurring towards, you know, all minorities and Black lives in particular.
Their signs.
Seattle, our neighboring city, has been had, you know, really large community protests and demonstrations. And in Everett, you know, we've been trying to work with our communities, make sure that we're doing everything we can to ensure that we're protecting the demonstrators and making sure that they can safely be heard and execute their right to gather and protest. So our police have done a very good job of kind of being a positive presence, I believe, in these demonstrations, of really just kind of staying back, not wearing full riot gear, but just really being there to make sure that there's no disruption.
Systemic racism was built into our Constitution. We've got to change that.
This is so important that these demonstrations are happening because of the atrocities of what we've witnessed in, you know, the last hundreds of years are still happening, and they're happening, you know, live and on video for all of us to witness. And so our communities are rightfully outraged and grieving, and they need to be able to do this. And we are still in a global pandemic. So what can we do to try to protect these individuals? And so, you know, I think one of the hardest things is there's just, as a leader, you're always dealing with problems you can't solve. And this one's a pretty big one, a global pandemic, the racism and destruction that it's caused in this country, those kind of merging things. There are times where I just kind of, you know, I sit in my office and I want to start crying, or, you know, you're just like, this is too big. I can't do this. And then you kind of realize, like, well, none of us can. That's why we all work together as a society.